Dhuritra-putra-pautrangscha Jami-jama-tripashadhan Svatva-vashishtam-yat-kinchit Grihakosha-parichchadam Grihakosha-parichchadam Dhuritri, daughters, putra, sons, potrangs, potram, grandsons, cha, and jami, daughters-in-law, jamatri, sons-in-law, parasadam, associates, svatva, property of Avashishtam remaining Yat Kinchit whatever Griha home Kosha accumulation of wealth Parichchadam household paraphernalia. Translation: King Puranjan then began to think of his daughters, sons, grandsons, daughters-in-law, sons-in-law, servants, and other associates, as well as his house, his household paraphernalia, and his little accumulation of wealth. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is not infrequent for a person overly attached to the material body to request a physician to prolong his life at least for some time. If the so-called scientific physician is able to prolong one's life for a few minutes through the use of oxygen or other medicines, he thinks that he is very successful in his attempts, although ultimately the patient will die. This is called a struggle for existence. At the time of death, both patient and physician still think of prolonging life, although all the constituents of the body are practically dead and gone. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sunivadi Paschachare Satare Mukam Karuti Bachalam Bhangam Mangayate Girim Yat Kripa Tvam Maham Bande Shri Guru Dinatanam Mukam Karoti Vachavam Pangam Langayate Yegirim Yat Kri Patvam Maham Bande Shri Guru Panchakalpaturibhyas Chakripaya Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. So, a reading this verse, and especially the purport, brings me back to Dallas in 1974-5. Srila Prabhupada was there, and there was one devotee who was sick with leukemia. And he was very, very ill. He was very emaciated, and hardly he could walk or anything. At that time, medical science was a little bit less what we might call advanced than it is now, and his parents were requesting that he take some chemotherapy, which at that time would offer him maybe 3 or 4 months longer life. And so they went to Srila Prabhupada. The parents asked one devotee to go to Srila Prabhupada and ask Prabhupada if he would approve of him going for this treatment. And Nirnashir, he didn't want to go. And so when the devotee asked Prabhupada, the parents, they're asking if he can have this treatment because they say this treatment will give him a prolonged normal life for 3 more months. Prabhupada said, normal life? He said, normal life is life without death. Can they give him life without death? And then he said, the trees, they stand for 500 years. But what is the value of their life? So we see that reflected here in this purport, that understanding of the devotee. The Srimad Bhagavatam speaks to 10 topics are isolated in the Bhagavatam. I won't go into all of them now. Maybe over the next few classes we can talk about different ones. But this particular section of the Bhagavatam focuses on two of them, Uti and Poshanam. Uti is how the miseries of the material body or the material desire bring us suffering or cause action to happen. And Poshanam means mercy, or how the great devotees or Krishna himself specifically enter into the life of the devotee to give them mercy in various different ways. And mercy comes sometimes in ways that we don't necessarily recognize as being merciful, but we find out afterwards it was merciful. So here you can see that Narada Muni, in both the story of the Prajetas, which is woven in here, and then Prachini Bari, we see this mercy coming in different ways. Lord Shiva, he gave mercy to the Prachetas when he saw them going off to perform austerities, and they were going off to perform austerities in order to be good householders and good rulers, and they were going to, you know, they wanted to be qualified, so they were going to fast for a few hundred years and do some austerities so that they could have control of their senses. And Lord Shiva saw them, and he gave them some mercy. He gave them some prayers to chant. We'll read about them. And then Narada Muni, he was looking at Prachini Bari and thinking, this guy's in trouble. Now, for most people, you'd look at a king and you think, well, he has everything I want. He's got wealth, he's got fame, he's got entourage, he's got a beautiful wife, he's got a big palace, he's got lots of stuff, and that's great. But Narada Muni looked at him and thought, this guy's a mess. He's completely an illusion, and he's going to die and take birth again and again and again and again if someone doesn't wake him up. Good morning, hello. There's higher purpose to life than the life you're understanding. So having Poshanam, having mercy, Narada Muni constructs this whole allegory, which takes up several chapters of the Bhagavatam. So we have to understand it's pretty important, because not everything gets that many chapters of the Bhagavatam. So the fact that it's given that much energy in the Bhagavatam is a testimony to the fact that this was a very important allegory that Narada Muni was creating. So all the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam are designed to point to the last topic, the 10th topic, which is Ashraya, which is the falling at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately becoming Krishna conscious. And every other of the topics takes us there. So the different cantos are saturated with various aspects of these 10 topics until we get to the 10th canto, which is saturated with Ashraya, which is saturated with let's get to know Krishna. But before we can get to know Krishna, we have to figure out who we are, what our relationship is with him, and that's what happens in these other cantos. So here we get a glimpse. When we look at Prachini Bari, we get a glimpse of the trouble material desire causes us in our material life. And it's even imperceptible sometimes. We're so covered over that we don't even know we're in trouble, right? Prachini Bari thought he was fine. It's not like he went to Narada and said, look, I'm really having trouble, you know, I don't know what to do with myself, and I'm at a crossroads, midlife crisis, you know. And I don't know how to proceed. Please help me out. No, he didn't do that. Narada Muni saw that he was in trouble, even though he didn't understand he was in trouble at all. And Narada Muni decided, I'm going to help this boy out. We see this a lot in Krishna, in our sojourn through the Bhagavatam and other scriptures, that great devotees go out of their way to help people who don't even know they need help. Right? Prabhupada did that. He came to America to give Krishna consciousness to people who didn't know they needed Krishna consciousness, who actually didn't think they needed anything. Matter of fact, they thought, and still think to some extent, that they have everything and that it's their responsibility to make sure everybody else has what they have, thinks the way they think, does what they do, And everything will be fine, right? If we all watch Avatar, then we'll get it, you know? It'll be perfect. We'll be good people. We'll be ecologically sound. We'll be green or blue. And we'll do everything right, because the people in Avatar are blue. So this is illusion. And Srila Prabhupada, even from his position in Vrindavan, could perceive that illusion. And so what did he decide? He decided, with the instruction of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and the disciplic succession behind him, to go on a journey to America and poshanam, offer mercy to the fallen conditioned souls. So here also we see that with Narada. And we see that with Narada lots of times. Narada does this again and again, where he comes upon somebody who's thinks they've got it, but they really don't got it, and he kind of blows their cover. He kind of exposes their illusion. And we see it in a lot of other places with a lot of other devotees, many, many different ones. We see Jad Bharat, right? He does it with Rahugana. Rahugana thought he was in really good shape, right? He was there in his palanquin, being carried by four pole bearers, thinking that he was the supreme controller and that he was very, very intelligent, very wealthy, very together, right? And Jad Bharat had renounced the world because he had his own experience, which indicated to him clearly that if he really wanted to go back to Godhead, he couldn't be distracted by anything. So he decided to appear to be Jada, which means unintelligent or, you know, kind of crazy, as we would call it, unconscious of the material world. So there was Jad Bharat trying to avoid ants on the path while he was carrying Rahugana. And Rahugana came out and threatened him. You know, who do you think you are? What's the matter with you? You're weak or something? You don't have enough muscles? You can't carry a palanquin? You're making my ride uncomfortable? And Jad Bharat, having poshanam, having mercy, being compassionate, he broke his own vow of renunciation and said, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You think that you've got it together, but let me tell you something. I was once a king, just like you. And now look where I am. And in between, you didn't notice, but I was a deer for a while, too. And you're thinking that you've got it together? Well, who knows what's going to happen to you in your next life? And when Rahugana heard him, even though he looked dirty and unkempt and other people were making fun of him, Rahugana could immediately understand, this is not an ordinary person. This is a person who has vision, transcendental vision. And so he was able to hear from him, right? Angira for Chichaketu. Chichaketu also, another king, had it really together. He had, what, a million wives or something? 100,000 wives or something? I mean, you know, many men would think, wow, I wish I could do that. And not only do I wish I could do that, but look at how he did it. He had palaces for everybody. He was really rich. It wasn't like he was trying, you know, on the bread line, trying to figure out how he was going to feed all his family. He had his act together. But immediately Angira saw, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong here. And Chichaketu, he thought, okay, I know what's wrong. What's wrong is I don't have a child. I don't have a son. I have all these wives, and none of them have been able to give me a son. My life will be perfect if I have a son. But Angira knew, no, you don't know what you're talking about. Right? You think you need a son, but what you really need is to understand that you need to get out of this material world. And so he created this situation where Chichaketu did have a son, and the son died in a rather uncomfortable way, very, very early on, when he was only several days old, by being murdered by some of his co-mothers, very kind ladies. And again, we see the mercy of the spiritual master, the mercy of Chichaketu, I mean, on Chichaketu, that you're an illusion. You don't even know you're an illusion. You don't even know what you need. But I'm going to tell you anyway. Even though you didn't really ask, you asked me for the wrong thing, right? You asked me for a son. But because I care about you, I'm going to give you the truth. And the truth sometimes a little uncomfortable, makes you squirm, right? Makes you feel a little bit, I don't know if I really want to hear that, right? The materialists, they cover up the truth. It's like we have with Siddhartha, right? his father, he loved him. He thought, oh, my son, he's so beautiful and he's so, you know, wonderful and he's so qualified. I want him to be a king. I want him to follow in my glorious footsteps. But he had his chart done, and the chart said, this man is going to be a saint. He's going to be a renunciate. So he thought, oh, no, he's not. Right? Different than Narada Muni's thinking. He thought, no, I'm going to fix it so that my son will stay in the kingdom and always be happy. He'll never suffer. Not only won't he suffer, but he won't see suffering either. So there won't be any reason for him to give up material world, to become saintly, to renounce. And so he protected him so that he could never see birth, death, old age, and disease. Anyone who was sick, anyone who was old, anyone who was ugly, anyone who was decrepit, he was removed from the sight of Siddhartha. Until one day when Siddhartha got a little older and he had a beautiful wife, he had everything he wanted, he asked, can I go out? I've been in the walls of this kingdom ever since my birth. I'd like to go out a little bit and look around. So they said yes, reluctantly, the father said yes. And then what he did was he tried to organize everything. He sent everybody out to clean up outside there, make sure all the old people were out of sight, all the sick people were out of sight. But he wasn't quite successful. And so when Siddhartha went out there, he immediately saw someone a little old, someone a little sick. He said, what's wrong with him? How come he's so wrinkled and bent over and he's coughing and sneezing? And the driver explained, that happens to everybody. Everybody gets sick. Everybody gets old. And ultimately, the funeral comes by. Everyone's chanting. What's that? Oh, that's a dead body. That's what your body will look like when the soul leaves. Shocking. And so he said, if that's what's going to happen to me, if that's what's going to happen to everybody, then all this other stuff is a waste of time. It's all a waste of time. And so he also took to the path of renunciation. We see with Bilva Mangal Thakur also, Somagiri, his spiritual master, came back again in the form of a prostitute. Chintamani. He spoke through Chintamani because Bilva Mangal was so enamored by this sexual attraction that he couldn't understand anything. Even though he had good training and a good family, he couldn't understand anything. All he could understand was, I want sex. So much so he was willing to go through so much tribulation, so much aggravation in order to get that relationship that I want to be with you. And when she saw him, she said, what's wrong with you? You came through all this trouble to come to me? If you had that much attraction for Krishna, then you'd be in good shape. But instead, you're spending your life doing stupid things. And now, look at you. You're dirty. You smell. You've just made a fool out of yourself. Get out of here. Go and find the Supreme Lord. And again, something in the heart went, oh, I missed it, and now I'm going to find it. And he also began to search for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So with us here in the material world, we were going about our normal material business, and all of a sudden Srila Prabhupada arrived in New York City and said, excuse me, hello, is there anybody interested in higher education here? We have many people who get PhDs, pilot higher and deeper, and they get all kinds of other very, very important education, but they don't know the goal of human life. Is there anyone here who would be interested in finding out the goal of human life? So there weren't so many takers. So then he said, how about samosas? Anyone interested in samosas? Gulab jamuns? Do I have any takers? There were more people interested in those things. And then the holy name. How about some good music? Are you interested in some good music? We have some drums, some kartals. You can come and we can jam. Would you like to jam with me? I'll be in the park every day at around noonish. You can come and we had a box of instruments, so everybody could pick some noisemaker, something that they could play. And there were some takers there too. So little by little, Prabhupada was able to spoon-feed the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to people who didn't even know that they didn't know. They didn't even know what to ask. because they didn't know what they didn't know. But Srila Prabhupada knew what they didn't know. Just like Narada Muni knew what Pachinibhara didn't know. Right? Pachinibhara didn't know what he didn't know. But Prabhupada knew what he didn't know. And Narada knew what he didn't know. So therefore, the great sages, the great devotees of the Lord, they come and they give us what we don't even know we need, but we need it so desperately that our eternality, our entrance into the kingdom of God, it depends on it. Our realization of who we are, it depends on getting that knowledge. And all we need is a little bit of humility. That's all we need. That's the qualification. Because otherwise it rolls off like a duck, water on a duck's back. We get the information, but the information doesn't go in. The information only goes in if there's a little bit of humility. So we see with these devotees who, although they didn't know what they didn't know, they were able to hear because they had a little bit of humility. When the stark truth stood before them, sometimes in scary forms, right? Having your child dead is scary, right? Having this analogy or this allegory that Narada develops in great detail, it's also a little scary. It's at times. It's rather graphic. But because Pachinibhara could hear a little bit, he had some piety, he was a little humble, he could take it, and he managed to accept, right? Even Bilva Mangal, who was absorbed in gross sinful activities, material activities, he was able to hear because he had some humility. So this is why in the Bhagavad Gita, when it's described the process of knowledge, Prabhupada says the beginning and the most essential ingredient is humility. Because without humility, there's no question of surrender. There's no question of hearing. We think we already know. We don't know what we don't know. And we think we already know. Why should I listen to you? Who are you to tell me anything? I've already got it together. Right? Get a job. Go do something useful. Leave me alone. I'm more powerful than you because you have to beg from me, right? You ask me for some donation for your book. Why don't you print your book and give it away for free, right? If you really know what's going on. Why come to me? I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. And all this is mine. Tomorrow I'll have more. Anyone gets in my way, I'll blow them off the face of the earth. So without that humility, one cannot hear. Now, we say, okay, well, we came to Krishna consciousness. We're already here. We're living in the temple. We're chanting Hare Krishna, at least sometimes. We're hearing Bhagavatam every day. Some people are coming. Some people are too busy. But we're thinking that now we have it covered. Okay, we're already safe. Now, I already know what I need to know. It's not like I'm an illusion that I don't know what I need to know. I already know, so I'm cool. But still, it's not true. And still, we forget practically on a daily basis what it is we need to know. And so the sadhus come, the saintly persons come, and they travel, and they preach, and they come and they tell us still what we need to know. They open. The other day, I was doing something, and I punctured my finger. And almost immediately, it became infected. Within hours, actually, it was all swollen and painful. And part of the problem was that the hole that the thing had gone in closed up right away so that it didn't bleed and nothing came out. And so I had to keep it open, right? In order to get rid of the infection, I had to keep putting hot water on it or drawing salves on it to keep it open so that it would drain. Otherwise, immediately it would close and it would get infected. So that's what we're like. We come in, we get a little open, and then we immediately close. And immediately the material infection starts again. Immediately we start calculating how we can be comfortable in Krishna consciousness, how we could get a little bit more money and a little bit more fame and a little bit more profit, a little bit more adoration. And we can kind of set up our own little kingdom here within the devotional atmosphere. So we can be devotees, but not too devotees. Just a little devotees. Because if But we want to go all the way back to Godhead. We want to make it all the way to the spiritual world. Then the spiritual master keeps coming and opening that up, opening up the wound and letting it out. So we have to keep purging ourselves of this material infection. And even though it may be painful sometimes, it may be uncomfortable sometimes, it's what we have to do if we want to go back to Godhead. And Prabhupada, knowing that, has given us the Srimad Bhagavatam. Even Bhagavad Gita, we consider Srimad Bhagavatam very advanced, Lord Chaitanya's teaching even more advanced. Bhagavad Gita is ABC. But we're not even in the first grade. So ABC is okay. You know, we can study Bhagavad Gita. Actually, Shruti Kirti tells a story about how Prabhupada told him many times for many different books that if you just understand one word of this book, your life will be perfect. Said he said it about Krishna book, he said it about Bhagavad Gita, he said it about Nectar of Devotion, he said it about Bhagavatam. To just understand one word of this book. First he started with, if you could just read one chapter, but not even one chapter, just one paragraph, not even one paragraph. If you could just read one sentence, not even one sentence, just read one word. Just understand one word and your life can become perfect. So the Bhagavatam is full, again and again and again, story after story after story, of persons who take the time to give mercy to somebody and open up their little shell, their little protective coating, and say, this is the absolute truth. Let it get, what do they say, open up your heart and let the sun shine in. And we get, you know, visions of beautiful butterflies and nice flowers. But it's not, that's not the sunshine. The sunshine is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, developing our relationship with Him. And before we can develop our relationship with Him, we have to willingly give up the relationship with the material body. We have to willingly give up the relationship with the false conception of who I am and what will bring me happiness. It's described by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion that the basic cause of all our suffering in the material world is, anyone know what it is? Oh, great, Nectar of Devotion teachers. Avidya, thank you. Avidya, ignorance. That because we accept that which is illusion to be that which is reality, from there, all problems come. Prabhupada compares it to a mathematical problem, right, where you add 1 and 1 is 3 at the beginning, and then the rest of the math may be right, but it's going to be wrong because you started with the wrong thing. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he develops this concept of avidya into 5 different layers in his Madhurya Kadambini. And one of them, the last one, is abhinivesha. And that abhinivesha is the fear that without this material body, I cannot enjoy. And that's why we're so scared of death. Because we think that our enjoyment is connected intimately with this material body. And if we don't have a material body, then how are we going to enjoy? It's not possible. So this level of avidya is 1 of 5. And it needs to be removed. So here we have Narada Muni doing this surgery. He's removing this tumor. This surgery on that particular bit of illusion. That because I think that this material body is my source of enjoyment, my only way to get pleasure, therefore I'm so afraid that anything will happen to it. I'm so afraid that I can't give it up. I can't give it up. And not only can't I give it up, but I have to decorated, I have to avoid suffering. Those are the other kinds of illusion that we'll discuss in the next verse. That I have to adjust things so that everything will give me my body pleasure. And I have to avoid those things that will give my body suffering. So here we have Narada Muni, very expert surgeon, crafting this medication. Very specific ingredients so that Pachini Bari's particular needs will be met, and the particular things that he needs to eliminate his avidya will be successfully combined. The prescription will be successful. So when we read these stories of the Bhagavatam, we have to be very careful that we don't distance ourselves from them, that we don't think, oh, these are very nice stories about somebody else many years ago, long, long ago. Once upon a time, there was a, you know, And then we put them over there, right? We're in this castle. 300 years ago, so-and-so did this and that and the other thing, but now it's a whole different ball. No, this knowledge is eternal. And this person that's hearing is us. This Bhagavatam is written for us. It's written to cut, right? Dharma projita kai travocha paramonya matsaranam satam. It's meant to kick out all illusion and all misunderstanding and give us pure devotional service. Unless we're willing to give up, there's a story in the Vedic, an analogy, it's cute, where this monkey, if you want to catch a monkey, you get a karai, which is a clay pot with a small opening that used for keeping water cool, and they put a banana inside. So the monkey, he goes and he puts his hands in the banana, to get the banana, and he grabs the banana, and then he can't get his hand out the small opening because he's holding on to that banana. And he doesn't want to let it go. And unless he lets it go, there's no way his hand's going to come out. But he doesn't want to let it go. So he's caught in this, what we call catch-22 situation. I want the banana, I'm not going to let go. Okay, fine, but I can't eat the banana because I can't get my hand out of this karai. Right? So if we want Krishna, we can't get Krishna unless we let go of the banana. And the banana is material enjoyment in general. In the beginning, in our devotional career, it's done very reluctantly. We try to go, okay, I'll give a little bit, but I want to, you know. I was listening to Hridayananda Maharaj speak when I was in Alachua just recently, and he gave a very nice analogy that I thought was very appropriate, that it's just like a young boy and a young girl. They come home to the father's house, the girl's house, and it's in the evening, and everyone seems to be asleep. So the boy is thinking, now I have a chance to be alone with this girl. We'll do some hanky-panky. So he goes into the living room, and they're in the bed, you know, they're in the couch. And then all of a sudden, the father comes downstairs. And he turns on the light, and he sits down in the chair, and he says, okay, you go ahead, do whatever you want to do. I'm just going to sit here and read the newspaper. Don't mind me. It's okay. I'm just going to read the newspaper. So immediately the boy and the girl, they feel a little uncomfortable. Well, I can't do what I wanted to do with you sitting there, right? But the father is saying, no, don't worry, don't mind me. I'm just here. You know, you do whatever you want. To go ahead, business as usual, just go ahead. So this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, this knowledge we get from the Bhagavatam at the beginning of our spiritual life, it's like that. It's sitting there in the back, right? And we're trying to go on with our material life, but the father is saying, I'm just here, don't worry. This knowledge, the spiritual master is saying it, I'll just tell you a little bit. Don't worry, just do what you want. But we can't do what we want. Once we have this knowledge, we can't go on in material life. We won't be able to enjoy the material world, and we won't be able to achieve the spiritual world either. So we have to let go of the banana. If we want to make advancement in spiritual life, we have to. So therefore, sometimes the pure devotees are a little bit strong, right? They're a little bit urgent. And you can see with Prachinibari, because he was getting old, because he was about to die, because his material life was going to fall apart, Narada gave him a fast forward, previews of the coming distractions. And so he was able to realize things very quickly. And this is what the Bhagavatam does for us. This is what the devotees do for us. They allow us to see the future quickly so that we can make appropriate decisions now when we still have the proper faculty to do so. And sometimes it's a little uncomfortable, just like that father sitting there watching the young girl. She's thinking, Dad, will you just go upstairs? And he's thinking, no, I have my responsibility to protect you. I'm down here. So it feels a little uncomfortable, but it's actually mercy, right? And if we're a little humble, we can take that mercy, and we can become advanced in devotional service. So I was told that I could only go a few minutes after 8:30, and now it's 8:33. So maybe I can get one question, and then Manohar Prabhu will come with a hook. So if there's any question, yes. I don't mind, ask him. He's the father sitting in there. go ahead, whatever you want. To start, yeah. That's right. That's right. I've heard many of my friends who make attempts to go away say that very same thing. Is that now, you know, now I know and it's hard for me to pretend ignorance. But that's again the mercy of the pure devotee, is that he doesn't want us to pretend ignorance. Even though it may appear to feel good, it's not good, and we know it's not good. Just like a child will eat pizza every meal if you let them eat whatever, you know, pizza, whatever it is. If you say, what do you want for lunch? Pizza. What do you want for breakfast? Pizza. What do you want for ice cream? What do you want for chocolate? If you let them do that, it may taste good right now, but they're going to get sick, and ultimately it's not going to be good for them. So the parent may say no, and the kid may go, I hate you, and throw a tantrum, but the parent knows this is what I have to do. You know, maybe it's uncomfortable, maybe you don't like it, maybe you're going to kick and scream, but that's okay. This is what I have to do. And so this is the spiritual master's position. The spiritual master is a loving father. Sometimes he has to smack us behind the ear, you know. And we have many. It's not just we have our initiating guru. We have many devotees who care. This is why Prabhupada, if you look through Prabhupada's books, you will find that Prabhupada says many times that he has created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness so that we will not be alone, that we will be in the Sangha of devotees and we can help each other. And helping each other sometimes means, hey, Prabhu, you're going off the deep end. Be careful, it's dangerous over there. You know, Bharat Maharaj, if you read Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's analysis of Bharat Maharaj, the reason he fell down, even though he was so advanced that he could walk away from his kingdom, it's described like someone just passing stool. He just walked away from it. But he was able to walk away, and he fell down. And the reason he fell down is because he had no association. And he didn't have the order of his spiritual master on his head. He didn't ask, should I do this? Is this what I should do? He just did it. And he left by himself, and because he was by himself, and because he didn't have the blessings of the spiritual master, he fell down. So Prabhupada created this movement for Sangha. And Sangha is nice when we get together and have pizza and chant, you know, mantras and you know, do some skits and have fun. But Sangha also sometimes means, hey, you're going off the deep end. Come back. Let me, you know, slap you around a little bit. Sometimes even we need that. And if we're humble, we can take it and we can feel the strength that comes from that kind of association. So I better stop. And thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Bhagavad Gita Srila Prabhupada.